Second recording for Saturday. Still on page 145 through 149. It's a bigger page than you think because of the number.
Right,
Byzantine mystery. What went together, but not the way it was presented, would be 148, 149, and 150 at the top. And that would have been a civil rights discussion. We spoke about the Brown case, which in public schools overturned the separate but equal Plessy doctrine. Jumped over to 150 and talked about how the first challenge of that was in Central High Little Rock in 1957. But in the chronological steps of civil rights activities, there is an event between those two things in 149 in December of 1955 through 56. It's 11 months long, the Montgomery bus boycott. This involves what famous person who died last year?
Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. And what did she do?
She sat on the bus.
I like being asked questions with the answers in front of me. I really like that.
Appreciate that.
I like that too.
Generable participation. Do you know the story about the way they... Did we talk about this already? The way segregated busing worked?
Mm-hmm. Everyone just...
I think we learned it every February.
Coming on his own. Right on. Glad to have you. Appreciate it. Don't run away. She'll be here.
Pizza
taken. Oh.
Mr. Johnson, but after the massive influx of Southsiders, what was those happening?
Is there any
coming? I don't know. I told my class that.
We need to get him a copy of the sheet.
Should I print one off?
Yeah, or either print one off and find it in the stack over there. Print one off.
Which sheets do you have?
Can you mosey over and see if he's got the right one?
What's the last one there?
For those of you frustrated by how much time is just lapsing,
there's only one edition
of
this. The last page,
but how do you know
the
system
to turn left into
it? I hear you say that. My fast forwarding on my computer is not like a tape player.
Pull the slide back up before.
Yes, and then I keep doing this over and over.
Like click, click. Try to drag it a second.
Yeah, all the pages except for the one you handed.
Okay, can you either find and or print that page?
The 145. It's the last
Here's
page.
It is right here.
Okay, it's got it.
Well, it's all on Meyer's beard.
And we'll find the next page.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Jones, those sheets are out of date. They don't have the 2006 Central Election added to them.
We need to print the replacements. So anyway, here is the way segregated busing systems worked in Jim Crow South. When people rode on the buses, they all paid at the front of the bus. If they were white, they continued on and sat in the front half of the bus, unless there were so many white passengers that the bus filled up, then the line that between black and white moved backwards to make more seats available for white passengers. If you were black, you came paid at the front of the bus and went back to the back of the bus and waited for the driver to open the door and get on from the back, and you could go up as far as the white line but no further, even if there were more passengers. And if there were more white passengers, you had to give up and surrender seats backwards. That's the way the system worked. The day Rosa Parks did her protest, so to speak, it really wasn't intended to be a protest. It was just a long, hard day of work. Got on the back of the bus, went up. If I remember correctly, what happened was she sat near the edge of the changeover, and when enough white passengers got on that the line started to move backwards, she refused to get up and surrender the seat for the moving white line and was arrested, and that's what kicked off the boycott. Now, there was a plan to have a boycott anyway at some point. The NAACP and Montgomery had this already in mind, and she was part of the movement to do it, but it wasn't aimed to happen that day. So she was just frustrated, and it got kicked off ahead of schedule. But she was still part of the movement. And yes.
At any point, were there any documented cases of people paying in the front, going in the back, and then being left by the bus without opening the back?
Seems feasible. Yeah. And
Like there's a second door at the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Martin Luther King was.
Back door.
Was at this one was just now becoming active in civil rights activities and was aware of what was happening in Montgomery and was asked by the Montgomery NAACP to come be a part of this protest, which he did, and because of his presence and name became the leader of the movement, and after 11 months it succeeded. The city caved in and renounced its Jim Crow policy and integrated the buses. And so the success in Montgomery in 55 was the foundation for future movements in the early 60s to desegregate transportation systems and restaurants and theaters, et cetera, which we'll, such as sit-ins and Freedom Riders, which we'll talk about in the early 60s over on the next page coming up. But so if you're doing a civil rights essay, you'll want to put the Brown case, the Montgomery bus boycott, and the Central High affair together in the 50s, and then when you move over into the 60s and get into the Freedom Riders and sit-ins and the law changes, we'll get to those also. But I think we are now, we did items 151, 152, 153.
154.
I think 54 we're at, the start of the Vietnam story.
We were just talking about Israel and stuff.
Did this thing ever get started back?
You told them that fast forward, so.
Yeah. But did they hear it? Is it on? Are you guys hearing me?
Andrew,
is this thing running?
Yes, the recorder is working.
They knew that. Did they hear that?
I didn't know it, though.
Because we talked about Anza's Cito and
Yeah. I did that project. Did you turned all the way up because of the lecture?
I don't know why I put it way up in 157.
And it's going to blow up there.
Sometimes things get out of order because I forget about them and throw them in somewhere later.
Yeah,
or sometimes the way the textbook approaches it is not the way I remember to tell the story. So when I build the sheets, I don't always go correct it from memory.
But,
but they can't hear about the bird.
I moved it closer so it'll be louder on the computer so we'd actually hear it.
So they can hear the bird louder?
So we can hear you.
So that's a bird.
But anyway, 157 did relate back to 151, and that's Dulles' foreign policy things. The Vietnam story. Some of this is probably greater in-depth background than you need, but I think it's important for understanding why things occurred the way they did. Indochina. Where was Indochina?
Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia. Thailand
was never conquered.
Southwest China and
surrounding. Okay, so on our PowerPoint presentation here, there, and there.
Yeah.
Was Indochina. And it was often called French Indochina. Why?
Because the French control.
After 1883, the French took colonial control of this area until when?
And
1954. That's what's going to happen in this area. So from the and that's why the language and the culture of that area is so French influenced. It's like many different places.
Did you ever notice we have a Vietnamese French sandwich shop?
Mm-hmm. I think I have noticed that. Did we talk about Ho Chi Minh during World War I?
Yeah.
He came to the Versailles Treaty to talk to Wilson for what purpose?
To talk about the self-determination.
Mm-hmm. Since self-determination for minorities was part of the 14 points and part of the Versailles outcome, he was in hopes that it could be true for Vietnam. Why did it not come to be true?
They were like, get out.
Yeah, well, because he had no credentials and was kicked out. But even if he had been of some credentialed background, that would have never happened because...
He's not white. Yeah.
More than just that. Let's say he had been...
Well, the French
white.
Didn't...
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what I'm looking at. The French didn't lose the war. They're not in any desire to get rid of their own colonies. They're trying to take over the losers' colonies. The mandate, German, Turkish, and Italian, but Turkish, Austrian, and German possessions are what are taken over. So all the British, French, and Italian colonies are not going to be liberated, including French Indochina. Do you recall from our World War II talk about why did Japan in pre-Pearl Harbor days move into North Vietnam and then finally all of Vietnam?
So that the American supplies can get to
China. Yes, because those supplies in violation of the neutrality laws feeding China in the late 30s and early 40s could be cut off. Who responded to the Japanese occupation? Who led the opposition to the Japanese occupation? Ho Chi Minh again. Through his Viet Minh, which means, you know, there's more to it. There's a longer name, but it essentially means the People's Army, People's Nationalist Army of Vietnam, shortened to Viet Minh. And after fighting and helping to defeat the Japanese in that area, it was his belief that in 1945, in the post-war period, in keeping with the Atlantic Charter. What was the Atlantic Charter?
The agreement between Churchill and Roosevelt.
That would be what?
It's like the 14 points of World
War II. It is. It's an idea for, and part of that 14 points rebirth in the Atlantic Charter is self-determination for colonies. So this is the point where it is expected that the winners will start to gradually release control over their colonies, and it was hoped by Ho Chi Minh and others that after France fell apart and surrendered to the Germans, and that they fought the Japanese, that there ought to be some kind of understanding that now Vietnam will be liberated. But it wasn't the understanding the French had. So the French held on after 1945. And that's where Ho Chi Minh leads the resistance against the French, winning a very significant battle against the French in 1954. Where?
Yeah.
Right here.
What number?
Should be 154.
It is. It's in the middle of 154.
The French loss at Dien Bien Phu is so significant that they now know they can't keep control over Indochina any further. That's the same guy that fought us and was purged by the Russians. So in 1954, an important summit is held in Geneva. Where's Geneva? Switzerland?
Yeah.
Geneva, Switzerland. And the so-called Geneva Accords create the following. There will be an independently created four nations, no longer under French control, Laos, Cambodia, North, and South Vietnam. And the North and South Vietnam will be divided at what parallel? Okay, 38th is Korea, 49th is Oregon, Washington. 17th. 17th parallel divides North and South. Also, within 2 years' time, by 1956, there will be an election held, and North and South Vietnam will be united together under the winner of that election. With that, the French start to quickly leave Vietnam.
What did you say, Vietnamese?
The People's Nationalist Army.
Was that Ho Chi Minh's army?
Mm-hmm.
When they become the
Vietcong.
Yeah, this guy down here, Ngo Dinh Diem, is he in here?
Yeah, he's...
He called the new resistance fighters the Viet Cong, which means Communist Viet.
Okay, what is so you're going to explain what these other nouns are?
I hope so. Here I go.
You just said one. Something.
I've said everything except the election results and Diem's action. I can't really pronounce that name. It's pronounced like with a Y.
So the Geneva, that part is in there because that's when the French...
That allows the French to get out. It is very obvious that Ho Chi Minh is now... out of the closet Marxist, firmly communist. And he's the most popular person in North and South Vietnam because of his anti-Japanese resistance during the war. They do a little market research on the public, the U.S. does, and discover that if the elections are honored in 1956, Ho Chi Minh will win by 80% North and South. And you'll have, by democratic politics, just a communist takeover of both Vietnams. As the French leave, two new forces start to make an appearance. One is the guy named Bao Dai. Is he in here?
He is not there.
So the French leave, though, because of the Geneva thing?
They leave because they lost Dien Bien Phu. And the way they leave is through negotiating the Geneva way out. It's a little better than the British-Israel trick. We're out of here. Just walk off. BAODAI, Bao Dai, is the southern Vietnamese political figure who wants to be in charge of both halves of the country, just like Ho Chi Minh in the north wants to be. And we don't want to see Ho Chi Minh win, so we support Bao Dai. Prince Bao Dai, I think his name. He's royal family blood. And when we see how the election would turn out, that he wouldn't win, we sabotage the election. And when no election takes place, the northern Vietnamese attitude is, if you can't win, unite the country under Ho Chi Minh through an election, we'll do it through resistance. So So that's where the Viet Minh, who were campaign people working out, turned back into resistance fighters, and that's where this fellow here, Ngo Dinh Diem, calls them the communists, and he replaces Bao Dai as leader of the South. So by 56, 57 onward, we are filling the gap of where the French were, supporting this fellow, Ngo Dinh Diem, as the leader of South Vietnam, and we don't want to see the two united through an election because he would lose to Ho Chi Minh.
So in order to protect democracy...
In order to protect anti-communism.
We would say democracy, but right.
If we were really for democracy, we would let him hold the election.
So did we honor the results, though? The rigged results?
We didn't allow it to happen.
We didn't allow the election to happen.
Yeah, in order, that's what I was...
No, we couldn't even rig it. We couldn't win even through rigging, so we refused to allow it.
They would know that.
So, as Bao Dai is shoved out of power, Ngo Dinh Diem by 56, 57 is the central figure in southern political activity. We back him. He doesn't want to honor the election either because he wants to stay president of South Vietnam rather than be loser of United Vietnam.
Okay. And then that Geneva thing, that last Cambodia, that divided Vietnam into
four. Yeah, let me go back and kind of try to make some more sense out of this. With Dien Bien Phu, the French realize they can't hang on. So their diplomatic way out of this mess is to hold a convention in Geneva, create four separate independent nations out of what used to be their colonies, and leave. In the separation arrangement, North and South Vietnam are only supposed to be temporary for 2 years, and they'll be united under an election. But in the two-year gap that takes place, first Bao Dai, then later Ngo Dinh Diem become leader of South Vietnam.
What caused Bao Dai to fall from power?
Diem just shoves him out.
Oh, okay. Democratically, or?
No. Strong arm with military support.
Oh, like revolution sort of thing?
But bloodless. Okay. Overpowering personality.
Even though it was his time.
And we support Diem because it looks like he's the one that can keep control over South Vietnam rather than have to cave into being taken over by the North. So what happens is what should have been a two-year temporary two states becomes now a permanent two states, North and South.
Because we didn't let the election.
Yes. And once the election won't go through, then Ho Chi Minh's thinking is, if we want to unite Vietnam under one system, and I'd like to be head of that, by the way, Ho Chi Minh thinks. And if we can't get it through elections, we'll do it through revolution. So the Viet Minh that fought the Japanese now are in the South fighting Diem's government. And that's where Diem calls them, renames them the Viet Cong, or Viet Communists. But the Viet Cong are not the only opposition to Diem. He also gets severe opposition from mafia forces, through various religious forces, through the Buddhists. I think he's Catholic himself. In addition to that, he himself is not very humanitarian. He's pretty strong-armed, right-wing fascist, and he has secret police. Secret police and tortures political opponents. So, both North and South Vietnam is not democratic. But this is his classic foreign policy position that America takes. What we will find America does in the late 40s and in the 50s and on into the 60s, really, we will sometimes back dictators or strong-armed leaders who are not democratically in charge of their people because what was the other choice? A communist revolution and overthrow. So we sometimes back the right-wing, dictatorial, authoritarian leader to avoid communism from taking over. We do it in South Korea. We do it in the Philippines. Cuba, at the same time, we backed that guy before Castro came.
Batista,
yeah. So it was common for Americans to get behind right-wing dictators, Franco in Spain, the Shah of Iran.
Did we back, Osama?
They were back in Mujahideen in the Russo, or the Soviet-Afghan war.
Yeah. As late as 1979.
Bin Laden
had in Mujahideen. Yeah, we supposedly were trained to work.
This pattern of Americans backing strong-armed dictators is built around the notion that they can keep the country friendly to us, they can keep the country pro-West. If they fall and communist forces take over, they'll be pro-Russian. So that's why we back Yim. And from 56...
But Yim didn't want to... He just wanted southern...
Yeah, he never wanted a united country. He just wanted to be in control of South Vietnam as president.
So how was Ho Chi Minh as president?
Over your Vietnam?
When he was president, how was it?
Well, there's an interesting point. Analysts, and of course this gets a little conservative interpretation, but analysts kind of think that Ho Chi Minh's major concern was uniting the country free from foreign influences, free from the Chinese, from the French, from the Americans, from the Russians, everybody. And that had he not been shoved to do so, he wouldn't have been that much of a Marxist, more of a nationalist. But since he couldn't get any help from the West, he goes to the Russians and the Chinese for the help. And that before 1949, we were kind of like, you know, who cares what's going on down in Vietnam? That's the French's problem. In fact, we almost kind of laughed like that's what the French get for being colonialists. But in 1949, what geopolitical change takes place in the Far East?
China
becomes communist. Then in 50 to 53, the Korean War takes place. So now the presence of communism in the Far East is not just some kind of problem that the French have to face. It's something that, if you believe in the so-called domino theory that Eisenhower put forward, what is the domino theory?
That if one country falls to communism, those keep going and going and going.
Mm-hmm. The neighbors tend to spread other neighbors, and so therefore if China and Korea and North Vietnam is communist, it's no longer just a French colonial problem. It is a worldwide threat. And going back to the whole World War II thing, if we'd stopped Hitler early, rather than waiting until he took over all of Europe, it would have been a lot easier. So if we stop monolithic communism early, before it takes over everywhere, the argument is Yim may not be democratic, may not be the best example of democracy and human rights, but we've got to prop him up and Thailand up and Laos up and Cambodia up before communism spreads into there. So that was the geopolitical strategic thinking of the late Eisenhower years. And of course, it spreads into finally Kennedy and Johnson have to deal with it. Which, from what we see here, after 156, we're going elsewhere and coming back to Vietnam later, right?
What were you going to say about from 56 to
something? From 56 to 62, we gradually completely replace the French as the backers of what's going on in the South over the fear of the North, backing them. And he's not easy to keep in power. He makes a lot of enemies besides the Viet Cong. And eventually he becomes so untenable that what happens? We don't do it. They do it, but they let us know they're planning to do it, and we approve. And it's no way to know if Kennedy had a hand in this or not, because it happened 3 weeks before Kennedy's death, and then they shot Kennedy, and there's never any kind of records by Kennedy whether he knew or approved of it.
They were connected.
Could be.
Who were some of the other enemies he made besides?
Again, the mafia groups, business elements, especially the Buddhists, because he was rough on the Buddhists. In fact, you may recall this. You may have read or heard about this, that some of the Buddhist organizations were so upset at his cruel treatment and violation of human rights that in protest they would commit suicides that were quite shocking by dousing themselves with gasoline and then burning themselves in the public square to draw attention to their protest against the Yim's cruelty. And he didn't help anything by making fun of them and calling them barbecue Buddhists. That was the only response to it. So here we are drifting into supporting this government.
Is there a number to go to assassination? Or is that later?
That's going to be like the... This is the bad way I'm presenting this. Civil rights in Vietnam, I do 50s stuff, then go up to the 60s and do 60s stuff. Instead of just all civil rights for 10, 15 years or all Vietnam.
So we're coming back to the...
Yeah.
So right now we want to be in...
Who assassinated North Vietnam?
Their own army.
Oh, South Vietnamese.
South Vietnamese Army elements, after talking it over with our State Department, letting us know that because he can't stay in power. He's made so many enemies, they don't think that a revolution is going to, not just Viet Cong, but other elements are going to overthrow them in the South. So to have a stronger president who can unite the South.
So why did we back him up in the first place?
He's anti-communist. In fact, here's a quote about, here's a MacArthur quote. back when he was wanting to put Chiang Kai-shek back in power in 1951, someone said that Chiang Kai-shek was so corrupt and so evil that he would be a terrible example for the United States to be backing. And he said, I don't care if he has two horns and a tail, if he's anti-communist, we can use him. And that kind of described why we back so many of these dictators. Better dead than alive.
Who said this?
MacArthur and Kerry. So I think we're finally stumbling out of the 50s here. I did 149, right?
What?
Which one?
Do you remember when I did that?
The Hungarian
uprising? I spoke about it in the same time we were talking about the Suez Crisis, because both occurred in 1956.
Did we ever say anything about Stalin?
Let me go ahead and do what's salient about 148 and 149. Stalin dies in 1953. What other Cold War event is occurring in 1953?
Korea.
The end of the Korean War. In fact, the death of Stalin may have hastened the end of the Korean War. Because from late 51 into 53, there's no more movement back and forth across the 38th parallel. There's just negotiations and fighting going on. And the North is reluctant to agree to a treaty. These three things move the North Koreans into being willing to negotiate. One is, first they'd argued about the soldiers captured. Remember when MacArthur did the Incheon landing and separated forces and North Vietnamese soldiers, North Koreans were captured in the South? They wanted to stay. And the Northern government wanted them repatriated. That's pretty bad, isn't it? Can you imagine if American soldiers were captured and the negotiations are hung up because they don't want to be sent back to America? But that's exactly what the story was. The first part was the North Koreans wanted to remain in South Korea, not be repatriated. Second circumstance was Eisenhower wins the 52 election and drops hints that once he becomes president, if the North is not willing to negotiate, he could use an atomic bomb. Third incident, which finally convinces the North Koreans to come to the table, is the death of Stalin. Because with Stalin dead, there's no longer a clear picture of who's in power in Russia, and would the Russians use their bomb if necessary to back up the North and the Chinese. So they negotiated.
Korea didn't have a bomb.
They didn't have one until recent years.
No.
China did get one to 64.
They got the title.
North Korea had a detonation, but it was small enough where you could have done it with C4.
But not in 1953.
Yeah. But the one they did recently wasn't very good.
Remember when they set off the one that they did? It was like, what's that thing?
With the death of Stalin, by the way, let's go on to what the rest of 148 is asking here. With the death of Stalin, there is this kind of struggle for power between 53 and 55 into 56. And by 55 into 56, the two people competing for power, Malenkov and Khrushchev, it's become Khrushchev. He's the one that takes control. And Nikita Khrushchev surprises many after he's in power in 56 by denouncing Stalin. And he reveals, yes, Stalin murdered millions. Yes, Stalin was cruel, sent people to Siberia, persecuted Jewish people, etc. We must reform the image of Russia by being a country that not only Marxist but stands for human rights. What Khrushchev found convenient to forget to mention was that he was, as a KGB member, one of the leading rounders-up of the people who were purged and killed.
What was, besides the death of Stalin and soldiers wanting to be repatriated, what was the other?
The election of Eisenhower and the hints of the use of atomic bombs. The Hungarian Revolt of 56, that occurs the same year as the Suez Crisis. That's where I mentioned about it yesterday. But this was a situation where Hungarians got the hint, got the clue from Dulles that if they rose up in resistance, they'd be helped. Where would they get that idea? What was Dulles saying? What was Dulles saying that gave
them? Rollback.
Yeah, that we're willing to go to the brink of war to protect the Western world, that we'll roll back communism. So the idea, they believed him, that he actually meant we would go in and actually roll back communism. And when that uprising occurred, we didn't, we couldn't, we wouldn't.
And then they were slaughtered mercilessly by the
Soviets. And then 12 years later, in 1968, another uprising was crushed by Russian tanks. Where?
In Hungary.
Greece.
Czechoslovakia. The Prague Spring Uprising. In fact, the Prague Spring Uprising in 1968 triggered the Brezhnev Doctrine. And the Brezhnev Doctrine is the Russians will come to the aid of protecting socialism wherever it's threatened around the world. Kind of a reverse on the Truman Doctrine. So let us talk about 149, the second 149, the third 149, the bottom of the page. I'm going to leave these numbers. I'm proud of them. At the end of the Eisenhower administration, 59-60, we had the ability to investigate and spy on Russia in a way they didn't over us. We could watch what they were doing in the way of their space technology and their air power, etc., through the use of what planes?
U-2.
Yeah, these U-2 flights, they can fly so high that the Russians couldn't shoot them down, but through with their ability to photograph, they could take pictures of what the Russians are doing. But the Russians are getting better at it. And they were firing and getting close and nearly hitting these U-2 flights. And it's in 1960, Eisenhower became very concerned about, we've got to stop these flights because Khrushchev did this. In 56 to 60, he began to say, we need a thaw in the Cold War. These tensions between our nations are not doing either of us any good. So even though we're afraid of the Sputnik and space race building up, Khrushchev is saying we don't need a Cold War, let's have a thaw. Let's have a summit meeting. So Khrushchev is urging that he and Eisenhower get together and start the groundwork for eventual limitation of arms growth. And Eisenhower is excited about it. As an old military person, you remember at the end of his career, he has the military-industrial complex, but he really is concerned about trying to slow down this build up of military weaponry in the Cold War. So plans are in the works to put together and have a summit. And he tells Dulles, you know, we got to stop these flights. Because they know we're doing it. We know we're doing it. The world doesn't know it. But as soon as they shoot somebody down, everybody's going to know it, and that's going to screw up all the summit. And Dulles said, one more. Just one more so we can get a final fix on what they have before you go to the summit.
And so this happened to be one of the Gary Powers or something?
Yeah, and this is the one that they finally shoot down. And the American pilot, Francis Gary Powers, lives and survives the shoot down and is put on public trial for U.S. espionage and spying. And Khrushchev, because of his own war campus, shoved to denounce Eisenhower and the U.S. in the press and say, I will have nothing to do with summits, that's all over with. And when Eisenhower was asked, did we do it? He said, yeah, we can't lie about it. They got him on trial, it's pretty obvious. They got the ship, so how can I deny it?
They've got the weatherboard.
Yeah. 2 years later...
Do you want to switch since we're changing time periods after the sheet?
I want to get this last comment made first.
Okay, well, I mean, when we switch sheets, do we want to switch files?
Stop the tape.
I think all I have to do is turn the page and keep rolling.
Just so it'll mess up the file labeling, though.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, because we've been doing 1934 to 1960.
Yeah.
You thought it'd never end, did you? And it hasn't yet. So. I'm glad you thought of it. 1962, Gary Powers was traded for the Russian spy Rudolf Abel. Thought comes to my mind that has no relationship to this. The first Russian in space, the first man in space, who is that?
Yuri Gagarin.
Died in a helicopter crash in 1967.